Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. We're coming to you live from Western Idaho, where actually the weather's pretty nice today. My AccuWindow forecast says about 64 degrees. Not bad for this part of the country. The solar wind tonight is 415 kilometers per second. Where have all the sunspots gone? As of yesterday, March 21st, the sun has been blank on 85% of the days of 2009. If this rate of spotlessness continues through the end of the year, 2009 will match 1913 as the blankest year of the past century. A flurry of new cycle sunspots in October of 2008 prompted some observers to declare that the solar minimum was ending, but since then, the calm has returned, and we are still in the pits of a deep solar minimum. All those solar scientists will soon be out of a job, I'm sure. Starting next Saturday, for 4 days, at about 9:30 p.m., you will be able to spot the space station flying overhead. You should go outside and do so. And while the space shuttle is attached, it is 40 times brighter than the star Sirius. Come on, impress your friends and take them outside next Saturday to watch it fly over. Although the economy is likely to continue to deteriorate for some time, the CBO said the government's $787 billion economic stimulus package and very aggressive actions by the Federal Reserve and the Treasury are projected to help in the recession and the fall of 2009. And I have to say, part of that stimulus package is in the field of new energy, which will have a return on investment of about 10 to 1. If you have not already done so, find an emerging energy company and invest in their future. If you don't do it, the energy barons will come out on top again. Come on, we the people, get involved. To find out more, go to GreenStarUSA.com. Scientists have, for the first time, detected giant twisting waves in the lower atmosphere of the sun, shedding light on the mystery of the sun's corona. That's the region around the sun, extending more than 1 million kilometers from its surface, having a vastly higher temperature than its surface. We'll learn a lot more about that later in the year. I'm sure they're going to reveal some more to us later. Next week on X Squared Radio, we're going to have Dr. John L. Turner. He is the author of Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations, A Doctor's Journey Through the Worlds of Divine Intervention, Near-Death Experiences, and Universal Energy. We are reviewing his book right now, and I think it's going to be an outstanding program. So make sure to tune in next week, and don't miss X Squared Radio. Last week, I was at the 2012 Quantum Leap Conference in Burbank, California. I have to say, I've been to a lot of conferences, many of them with the theme 2012. I've never been to one that had a more positive, more uplifting theme than this one put on by Sri Ram Kaur and Kira Ram Kaur, I was greatly impressed by the hospitality, the courteous nature, and a tremendous uplifting spirit at that conference. If you get a chance, they're going to have another one later on this year in Florida. You definitely want to keep up with that. Go to 2012quantumleap.com and keep up with that. If you don't, we'll keep a link at X Squared Radio, and you can keep up with that as well. A lot of new businesses popping up out there. People are finally realizing that job security begins and ends with their own two feet and their own two hands. In doing that, you're going to need a business card. So don't forget, while you're at X Squared Radio, click on that Vista Prints banner there. That is a great business card printer, and nothing can be cheaper than free. That's right, free business cards. Click the Vista Prints banner at X Squared Radio and get started with your own security plan. And also, if you have a child, which I have two, in college, those pesky textbooks come around twice a year. They're so expensive now, you have to take out a small home loan in order to keep your child in school. Try clicking on the Campus Book Rentals banner at X Squared Radio. Brand new business just came out, one of the most outstanding ideas I've ever seen, a way to cut hundreds of dollars out of the cost each semester of that college education. Check them out, Campus Book Rentals. Tonight on X Squared Radio, we have a guest who has been on the program before, he and his wife. I have to tell you, we have a lot of UFO guests on this program. We have had a few crop circle guests on this program. I have never had a pair of guests that know more and can master more information cross-dimensionally than Ed and Chris Sherwood on the subject of both UFOs and crop circles. Welcome to the program, Ed and Chris. How are you?
We're fine.
Hi,
thank you, Brooks.
Thank you very much for that lovely introduction.
Yes, thank you indeed.
Well, it's a heartfelt, I can tell you. I was in Santa Monica, let's see, probably in December. We were shooting a History Channel special on HARP, which many people know is the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project.
Yes, indeed.
That was part of a series, which I cannot mention contractually at this moment, because it hasn't started yet on a History Channel. But it was a great special, and I love Santa Monica. I went to a Santa Monica high school, and I used to surf the Santa Monica beaches, so I have an affinity for the area. And that's where you're from.
Yes.
Or where you reside right now.
That's where I'm from. Ed's from England, but yeah. I have a big history in Santa Monica myself.
I've been here 14 years.
Well, you're a native then.
Practically.
Anything over 10 years, you're automatically a California native. I was born and raised there, and I don't feel like I belong anymore.
it's really changed an awful lot. We don't really feel like we belong either. So, you know, in fact, we'd like to be in a more rural, peaceful place, and that's one of our goals.
Yeah, I'm a country boy, actually. I grew up in the countryside, and though I've lived half my life or more in towns and cities, my heart is always in the countryside.
Yeah, there's nothing like the smell of fresh-turned dirt. It just has, I don't know, a smell of life about it. It's just much better than concrete and asphalt, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the countryside in England where, you know, we've been so many times to visit crop circles, the air in the wheat fields is just, you can't match it. It's just glorious. It's wonderful.
Before
that earth and straw and all the...
Sorry to cut you,
Sarah. Sorry.
Before I moved here, I was living in a valley in Wiltshire, which was a major UFO hotspot in the world, and very close to the epicenter of where more than 90% of the world's crop circle formations had appeared. So it's a tremendous contrast for me to be here in Santa Monica on the doorstep of Los Angeles, unable to see a horizon, here we are, and we have a job to do, and we've been doing it, and some interesting things have been happening here.
Well, that being said, it is a very connected place. You're not far from Hollywood, and there's certainly a lot of, shall I call it, new age interest in the area. It's not so hard or so expensive to put together a salon or a conference or a meeting and actually have people show up, which would be nigh impossible here in Idaho.
Yeah.
Not that there are not spiritually awake people in the state of Idaho, but there are not very many spiritually awake people in Idaho. Did I say that? Yes, I did. Okay. My family is from Stranraer, Scotland, which is on the very western coast of the UK and Scotland. And that's where the ferry takes off to Belfast. And it's a very secluded little cove. You can only get there going down a two-lane road from Ayr, which is due west of... it's not actually on the other side of the country from Edinburgh. So, but it's a beautiful drive. I mean, just beautiful meandering roads through green hills and just unbelievable. But people in the U.S. are not ready for a Scottish summer, let me tell you. I am not a tropical person. I in my genetics is a 55-degree summer. I'm very comfortable in that kind of weather. 95 and 100 degrees like you get in Santa Monica or in Western Idaho is just
I don't like the weather here. I mean, there are a lot of English people that moan about the weather, and they want to escape the winters and go to Spain and other hot places. But I've always loved the weather of England, the four seasons, when there were four seasons before global warming changed all that. And to come here, and although, you know, the weather is also taking a big knock here too, especially in the last 14 years, I've noticed some changes. But to have days where, you know, most days of the year you can walk around in a t-shirt, it's nice for a while, but it gets boring too.
Well, that's true. That's true. You know, one of the things that that also has changed in the last 14 years is the frequency and quality of interactions between off-worlders and people of Earth, it seems. And I'm not even sure that all the off-worlders are actually off-world anymore. Maybe they actually live here and have always lived here, just not in our neighborhood. But now it seems as though they're popping up everywhere. It's like 75% of the population of this country, anyway, has either seen a UFO or believes in UFOs. Now that's an amazing shift in the last 10 to 15 years. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, definitely, and I think that's what the change, if you like, in the UFO, worldwide UFO presence has been noticeably in the last 15 or 20 years. More and more reports and sightings of objects in daylight over centers of population. And, of course, the big event that seemed to draw tremendous attention to this change was on July 11th, 1991, over Mexico City and other cities in Mexico, when a total solar eclipse occurred, and at the same time objects were sighted over cities and videotaped. And this event very much seemed to start a new change where at least a number of visitors, off-worlders, extraterrestrial intelligences, civilizations, are trying to show themselves more, I think, to affect that change in our consciousness and to do it in a non-threatening manner, but certainly stepping it up, because echoed by many contactees, including my own experience of close contact with non-human intelligences, is the fact that we are damaging this planet. And we're damaging more than just our biosphere. We are damaging a Genesis project, I think. And that there are intelligences that are coming and going, been here a long time, some maybe not so, but others definitely so. Some there's evidence, like you suggested, that there may be some spending time here. There's suggestion of underwater possible bases or facilities due to the high incidence of UFOs seen coming and going from certain locations, including the Bay of Santa Monica. There was a pretty amazing and fairly well-known UFO fleet sighting of more than 100 objects lifting up out of the Santa Monica Bay in 1992. And
really? 1992?
Yeah.
I must have missed that on the national news. Tell us more about how that was spotted and how people were affected by it.
Well, I don't know a great deal of information except what has been presented on the show UFO Hunters on the History Channel and in one or two book sources. But basically, there were multiple witness sightings of up to 100 or more objects coming out of the bay, hovering for a period of time, and then shooting off at tremendous speed. And at least one person was very disturbed by what they saw and called in to the local police to report their sighting and concern. And I only learned of this sighting a few years ago after I started to witness and videotape UFOs above our very neighborhood.
In fact, a very well-known piece of footage just comes to mind is the one shot in Catalina Island. There's a great piece of UFO footage. I think it was 1966, perhaps. That it's on YouTube. It can be found. A wonderful daylight sighting of an egg-shaped UFO just gliding across the ridgeline over Catalina Island. So there's been over the years, sightings in this area in particular.
Well, there was, way back right after World War II, there was the Battle of Santa Monica.
That's right.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't know, but one of the gunners in that battle, actually fired weapons up into the sky at the object, mm-hmm. was DeForest Kelly, who played Bones on Star Trek.
Right. Oh, for goodness sakes. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so there's some history here. Certainly. And Topanga, of course, is a place well known for UFO incidents. I've seen one or two pieces of footage from the 80s and early 90s of very interesting objects shot in daylight. And also another rare piece of footage that I actually spotted independently a few years ago while sipping a cup of tea, having a break, and watching an old 1961 war movie just for a few seconds called Sniper's Ridge. I have this report up on the website, on our website, which is called cropcircleanswers.com. And if you go to the sightings page on that page, there's a report of of this incident where a movie was being made locally, and an object, very clear object, was filmed in the background sky, traveling across horizontally, slowly left to right, while the main battle action sequence was being filmed. And I guess because the budget for the movie was small, they couldn't redo the main action sequence, so they left the footage in.
Maybe didn't notice,
Well, it's pretty obvious. It's
yeah,
difficult
it is.
Not to notice it.
It is. It's quite remarkable. It's very similar to the Catalina egg-shaped white
just
sphere.
Like it. Mm-hmm. So, with the battle over L.A. and the famous Catalina footage and many more, this is one of the hot spots. And I think,
have you two ever been to James Gilliland's up in Trout Lake, Washington?
No, we've been invited to go a number of times, and we just haven't been able to break away from our own projects and afford to do that.
Well,
but
you
no,
need
we're
to set
familiar.
Aside.
Have you been there?
It's July 4th weekend.
Pardon me?
I think it's July 4th weekend this year, or maybe it's the weekend after, but it's you should get up there. I saw my first UFO there in 2006.
Wow. Oh, good. goodness. Yeah, he has a very energetic, powerful vortex on his land, it seems.
There's also another thing. Location, as we know in ufology and in crop circles, is very important, and parapsychology in general. Location and also what we do at our locations. And when I moved here into the heart of the city, I really didn't expect to see too many more UFO events, especially daylight UFO events. And, you know, prior to being here, I lived in a valley where daytime and nighttime events were common. And we saw two different types of UFO on a regular basis. You had your ball plasma fireball-looking type of UFO, and you also had your technological extraterrestrial-looking objects. But when I came here, I thought, apart from disseminating the research, I might not experience too many more sightings. And in early 2006, I was proven wrong. I mean, I'd seen maybe a dozen of interesting things since moving here in 1995. But in 2006, while trying to recover from a serious illness, they just started appearing, and I started to do something I'd done a lot in England, where I would do an earth healing meditation, and before to do the earth healing meditation would mentally invite benevolent extraterrestrial intelligence participation in the earth healing meditation, if they could, if they would like to and could, if they were aware of it, to participate, just an invitation. And they started turning up, like had happened in previous years, mostly in England. And so I grabbed a video camera and started to film them. And within a year of doing this on a regular basis, I saw about 60 UFOs and videotaped 40 of them, all daylight.
And this was all over the Santa Monica area?
This is all over a small area of Santa Monica.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, I mean, even I was taken aback at first at how willing to participate and grant a sign of participation, because I would always ask permission to be able to videotape anything first before I did anything. We would do the meditation for about 20 minutes, an earth healing meditation. Then we would do a sky watch for anything from 30 minutes to an hour. And usually, most of the time, within 5 minutes, an object appeared over one or several, just a few locations, and often in the same ones. And as I say, over a year, they allowed me not only to witness them and have other people witness them, but also to record them. And I think the feeling it gives me, I mean, I've done this for many years, since the mid-80s, taken small groups of people out into landscape to sacred sites or to places in the landscape where I feel the natural earth energies at that location are strong. And when we meditate, we will enhance those by meditation and by the act of meditating. And so, and follow it with a sky watch. And
I have a question, because
sure.
You know, it seems like you're not the only one, expert that I've spoken to that seems to couple meditation, or at least not letting your mind and the rigors of the day get in the way of partaking in these special events. One of my friends says, if you think you're going to grab your camera and run out on the back porch during commercial time and shoot pictures of orbs and UFOs, you're sadly mistaken. This is something that takes preparation, and there is, as it were, sort of a telepathic link that is done.
Yes,
right.
You know, and so, not to go into a whole lot of detail or spend the next half hour talking about techniques of meditation, but how do you meditate? Do you do it alone? Do you do it with people? Use yoga?
Right.
What style of meditation do you use?
Well, for me, meditating is simply the act of giving your whole undivided attention to something, whatever that is, whether it's an inner world of your thoughts or the outer world around you. It's giving your complete undivided attention to something. So in this case, we were giving complete undivided attention to thinking global healing thoughts and world peace thoughts, knowing that as we do this, with the intention, with the awareness that our thoughts are energy, and so is our attention and our intentions, and these are psychokinetic energies, and they will have an effect whether you see them or not. And you may not see them. You may not see the effects of your meditation, but there is always an effect. So we simply go somewhere where we can be quiet and peaceful, feel protected, so we can concentrate for about 20 minutes to half an hour at the most, sometimes shorter, and give all our attention to visualizing world healing. And there's many ways you can do that. Lots and lots of variations on the theme are possible. But before we really get underway, we request the support of the universal mind, whether you want to call that God or something else, infinite intelligence of life. We call on that to support our meditation, but also, as I said previously, we send out a mental invitation to non-human intelligences without putting a restriction on what group or what civilization. So we don't stress one group or another. It's an open invitation. The only thing we stipulate is that they participate with love, and that they join us in consciousness as one mind, meditating at the same time. And often we will do the meditation at the same time as a known global meditation is taking part. And for example, there's one that occurs at 11 a.m. on Sunday mornings, Pacific Standard Time. Happens worldwide, has been going on for quite a few years. And what we do is we often will participate when we can in that meditation or another global meditation, knowing that with more people meditating at the same time, more minds, more energy, more positive effects possible. So it's a very simple meditation. Anyone can do it if they can give a complete undivided attention to the act. And you don't need to be a master anything. You don't have to master yoga or do any necessary formula. Whatever works for you. But do it with the awareness that we are not alone. If you're not sure of that, then, you can try it as an experiment. But if you are already convinced from your own experience or research that we're not alone, then all evidence indicates that there are benevolent intelligences out there, and that, again, proponents of evidence shows that they can be very psychic. They can tap into the global mind, the universal mind, just as we can. So what we do is we send out a mental invitation. We ask permission to videotape things, if that's possible. We ask them to grant us a sign of their participation in the meditation, if they can grant it, if it's safe for them to do so. So we also, another important thing, and I've seen this affirmed many times by sightings, And that is, they really need to see that you are sincere in what you're doing, that you're doing it with a full heart. You're not doing it with ulterior motives. You are doing it for spiritual reasons. You know, if you want to align yourself with spiritual intelligences, then you have to adopt a spiritual approach. Otherwise, why would they want to participate with you? But I've noticed that the more the benevolent intelligences, you know, looking down on Earth, seeing what we're doing, they particularly like or seem to support individuals and groups that will take initiative by themselves, will do what I call basically a close encounter of the fifth kind, or a CE5, which is very simply a human-initiated encounter with one or more UFO and or extraterrestrial being. But the important thing is it's human-initiated. So, for example, you might do a meditation. You might take yourself to a location where there's a sacred site or a sacred, like, space or energy, and do this meditation. Be patient, too. If you're doing it to see something, if you're doing it to have a sighting, then it may not work for you. Remember, the primary reason for what we do is we do a meditation for the Earth because we really feel that the psychokinetic energy of our consciousness, and especially combined consciousness, collective consciousness, can be very, very potent in healing people and healing the Earth in trying to influence positive, materialized psychokinetic effects. These intelligences look down and they see a group, for example, on a hill just waiting for them to turn up, waiting for the ETs, ET intelligences, to put on a spectacle or a display. That is not as attractive or interesting, I think, for them as a group of people who are not waiting for them to do something. Don't have high expectations. In fact, that's another important thing, is to surrender your expectations. Surrender yourself to the possibility that the universe is full of intelligent life. We can be part of that, and there are other intelligences of a spiritual nature who will, if they can, support our own attempts at a psycho-spiritual approach, and not just a mechanical approach where also we are driven to try to get proof and film them and so on. It's more, for me, it's been a long time process. It's been a process of years.
It might be for the planet too, because
sure.
I mean, in the beginning of the program, we mentioned how UFO sightings had increased dramatically over the last 10 to 15 years. And even in the 50s and 60s, you know, it was very popular. It was Flash Gordon. There was everybody from Gene Autry to Flash Gordon was getting into UFOs. But as you say, it was more for the entertainment value, and it was determined by professional organizations, including the Brookings Institution, that the general populace would probably panic and our socioeconomic system would collapse if there was, say, global first contact, like, you know, the day the Earth stood still kind of contact. However, it is globally accepted that something is wrong between the habits and thinkings and doings of humans and the well-being of the planet. And so there's a great awareness about that now. And there's a great, even if there isn't a great spiritual involvement in it, there's a great awareness about it. And even those, you know, people that enjoy NASCAR or people that enjoy fine art, I don't think they're the same, to tell you the truth. But both of those classes of people realize that what they do affects the well-being of the planet. And that realization might be the catalyst that has increased the interaction between, or at least the showing of one dimension or one race to another. Prior to that, as you say, we may have been in it for the entertainment value only. Now, we're sort of looking out for others who may have more experience with their planets than we do, who might come forward and say, look, we went through this once before. There are some things that you can do better to put yourself more in balance with your planet, because you, humans, are symbiotic beings with your planet. And if either one of you get out of sync, the whole of you are going to go extinct, and maybe that's why we're here. Is that the feeling that you get as well?
I think that and more. I think the dilemma here on Earth is even more serious than most realize. Beyond the ecological damage that's taking place is that the what I often call the Genesis Project of this planet, the long-term evolution and stimulation of life forms on this planet from other intelligences throughout its history, tweaking it to the point where you arrive at the eventual evolution of a hominid life form with a brain complex enough to process self-aware, thinking, intelligent consciousness, i.e. a hominid man, Cro-Magnon, for example. I think that there are civilizations that have in ways seeded the planet or stimulated its evolution and the development and consciousness development of the humanoid life forms on planet Earth throughout its history. And for us to bring the planet to the brink of destruction is to destroy, threaten this project, which I feel is essentially for the soul, for our souls to experience. I feel like there's more here than simply another physical planet with physical civilization rising on it. Maybe it won't survive because of the way it's treating its world. I feel like this planet is like a school for all souls to come here and learn what life is as through the experience of being a human being in a very dense, very rich, very diverse, very physically tempting world. A world where to master mentally, psychologically, socially, and to bring into balance, hold into balance, the physical world and the spiritual world is a real challenge. And I feel like that's probably the case on any planet that supports self-aware, thinking, intelligent life. But here, it has tremendous importance, because I feel like because of the nature of this planet, this is one of the things I learned from my close contact with an extraterrestrial intelligence back in my childhood and teens, where certain information came from that experience, including that this is a planet that is a place for all souls to experience life in the most dense way and to learn how to love and find truth and learn what freedom is and so on, and also to ask the existential questions that we all have within us to answer at some point, which rise to our consciousness at some point of why are we here, where did we come from, how did all this come into being, how does it end? These questions are not easily answered in one
lifetime. They're not commonly asked either. I have to say, even in this day and age.
That's right, because of the social conditioning.
Yes, 6.7 billion people on the Earth. Not everybody's conscious that they're conscious, you know.
That's right.
No, and the planet itself has gotten into such a critical crisis of all elements of it, spiritually and physically, environmentally, that, you know, these phenomena, we believe the crop circle phenomenon itself, one of the main reasons that it began appearing was to call attention to the damage that was being done to the planet. And, you know, in fact, a lot of times the circles appeared at places, sacred sites that were being desecrated and, you know, bulldozed for roadways. And in fact, the one in Laguna Canyon that appeared right after Ed moved here, there was an authenticated, scientifically analyzed crop circle that appeared just weeks after Ed fully immigrated here, and it appeared on Native American land where a development company was destroying a habitat, a natural area, and burial grounds of the Tongva Indians and a sacred cave where they performed their solstice rituals, and there was a lot of protest to it, and this large three-part crop circle appeared just adjacent to that, much the way that they've appeared in England in places where of desecration and development, destroying natural.
Well, there have been periods of desecration in the past. I mean, the Romans, when they would conquer a land, they'd salt the fields. It just literally ruined the ecology.
Right. That was so local. We have the ability to kill the planet this time. Yeah, that's the difference.
Humanity is the first time in human history that humanity is actively now destroying its planet.
I understand that. You know, we have 6.5 billion people plus on the planet now, more than have ever lived here before.
Yeah.
And our technology, the technology too, the accelerated damage due to our technology is a massive factor. And I think, again, like you echoed earlier, it underscores one of the reasons why we are being visited, why they are showing themselves. They need to prick that global consciousness and for people to start functioning with the awareness that we are not alone.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, since mid-1800s, we've been burning petroleum, and of course, in the early days, it was much, much more dirty than it is now, but you know, that's old technology. It's 200-year-old technology. We need to leave it behind.
Oh, we have to. And these
move
days,
on
China,
to more
China
technologies.
Right, definitely. Well, the more developed countries like America is a little bit ahead, but some of the more developing countries are just getting into that technology and putting horrific amounts
it's
of...
True. I was in Nepal last year, and it was horrible. I mean, you couldn't even breathe. You couldn't drink the water. The rivers were polluted. The roads were horrible. You know, there where we were, you know, back in the 20s, it's just not. They need so much guidance and so much leadership in these areas that are just destroying the world.
Oh, it's just horrific. It's just, you know, beyond words.
So for us, most of the non-man-made crop circle formations, and certainly a lot of the UFO activity, one of the reasons why it's happening is to draw our attention, simply to draw our attention to other realities, so that we start to have this more expanded state of consciousness, so that our decision-making process comes from a more expanded state of consciousness. I feel like we're humanity at this time, and the planet is in a big battle. And the time we're living has been prophesied by different cultures to be a great crunch point. And you know, the word apocalypse has said a lot, but the word apocalypse actually means to unveil and reveal something rather than destruction. And I think that we are going through a great revealing. And that's why also we're seeing more, not just because there are more people looking up or because there's more video cameras around or something, but literally there is also increased sightings, increased events for the purpose of waking us up, drawing our attention. And it doesn't have to be a big object to do that. In fact, I've long felt since I was a child, and now after more than 200 UFO sightings, close encounters of the first or the fifth kind, you know, lots of affirming experience that they are here. There are multiple ones here and all sorts of reasons why. But it's important that we collectively, at least enough of us, begin to strike more of a balance with physical world, the spiritual world, and recognize the signs that have been occurring to, I think, draw humanity back. I say humanity, the part of humanity that is listening, maybe not all, because, you know, human evolution on this planet has often gone through leaps and bounds due to a relatively small number of people making breakthroughs or achieving that level of expanded consciousness that then, once it gets disseminated, it draws more people in and so on. It keeps going.
You know, I think it is having its effect, and you're gonna think I'm crazy for thinking this, but right now, you know, almost a universal complaint is that the economy is slowing. You know, people are getting laid off, and people aren't coming to the stores and buying things. But you know, it could be that the reason people are not buying is because what they want to buy, what they feel compelled to buy, what they feel they need to buy, is not being offered. Let me give you an example. Right now, if you were to say, I want to buy a hydrogen fuel cell vehicle, and I want to fill my car up with hydrogen, totally non-polluting, and I want to drive to work feeling that I'm doing something green for the planet, you can't find it. You can't find a vehicle to buy, and you can't find energy to pour into your vehicle because it's not available. So what does the government do? They get mad at you because you're not buying oil and burning it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what has happened is there may be a global economic awakening going on where people are realizing, I need to spend my money on something else. And so the old buggy whip factories are beginning to go out of business, like banks and like oil companies and all these technologies that got us where we are,
yeah.
But they're obsolete, they're out of step, they're out of sync with the planet. And the ones that are in sync, the ones that really have the benefit, the ones to which, and I'm going to say the ETs are leading us, are not available yet. And that's where the out of step comes from. That's where, I talked to a lady just the other day, in fact it was just a couple of days ago, and I said, you know, I get the feeling that you don't feel like you belong here. You're from somewhere else. And her face lit up, and she said, oh, you're right. I mean, I'm 40 years old. I've been here on this planet my whole life, but I don't feel at home here. Something isn't right here. It's not the way it was where I came from, and it needs to be that way. And she's not a techie. She's just an ordinary person. People are feeling this in their heart of hearts. Is this the way you feel as well?
Yes,
we feel there's a great, you know, we tend to come back to spiritual, you know, not religious, to really define that, but spiritual, because it's a spiritual love of the planet that makes people want to protect it and to connect on a spiritual level. But this is something that the old technologies and, you know, all the video games and computer distractions and TV and things that the kids, you know, turn to it, to entertain themselves, it's so lacking in any real content. It doesn't have anything. There's no spiritual connection. There's nothing of meaning. There's no real meaningful thing that they get nourishment out of, you know, for their souls and or for their minds, for that matter. And I think that's one part of the big bubble that's bursting, that people are all feeling this emptiness of all this stuff doesn't fill them up. It doesn't satisfy their lives. It's
not something you feel when the going gets tough.
Well, yeah, it reminds me of the book of Haggai. I mean, people don't read Haggai very much, but he says, he records there something to the words of, you know, man, consider your ways. You eat and you're not filled up. You drink and your thirst isn't quenched. You earn money, but you put it in bags with holes.
Yeah.
there's no
exactly.
There's no substance to our labor.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
Nothing fulfilling about it.
And it's becoming more obvious to people, I think, you know, with this big crisis of economy and everybody's, you know, reevaluating what's important. And hopefully,
well, it's not really a crisis. I mean, yeah, the dollar has slipped, and yes, traditional business is probably going to go through some death throes, and they're going to try and pass some laws to force us to buy buggy whips, and we're still not going to buy them. We the people are going to force the business to go the way we want it to go, and sooner or later, one of these technologies is going to squeak out of the patent jail, and it's going to make it out of somebody's garage, and it's going to be available, and everyone's going to buy it up, and then it's Katie bar the door. We're off to a new technology revolution.
There's something to visualize in your meditation. You know, oftentimes when I do an earth healing meditation, asked to invite, and I don't always invite, but sometimes, to gain evidence, sometimes to be able to show that to other people that it actually does work, can work, but I often visualize that there is a board meeting taking place by heads of multinational companies. It's just a symbolic visualization. It could be hundreds or thousands of different types of businesses, but I imagine a boardroom with a great big round table and a bunch of execs from top companies, including oil companies, gathered around it, and in that room is a being or a person or a light, something that draws their attention and is requesting that they decide, make decisions for more holistic decisions. For example, think of a sustainable economy, a sustainable society, things in a sustainable way rather than these very short-term greedy gains. But think of the world you would like your children to inherit, and their children. And so surely the most intelligent way to go about business would be to try to make it sustainable, to protect your resource so it is sustainable, to get off non-renewable energy sources and release that information and technology that's out there, you know, behind closed doors, in garages, which would, you know, released and intelligence applied to turning it into a way to bring it to everybody. You know, visualize it and see. We've all heard how the power of prayer can affect illness in people's bodies. And I'm a great supporter of doing this for the globe and the planetary situation. And it only takes a few people in that boardroom meeting, I think, in a position of power, say, to start to think about their lives more, the purpose of their lives, their families, and how they would like their company to survive and sustain itself. So it needs a more spiritual approach. That just might need a spiritual approach to bring it into balance.
And I think you're wanting to distinguish between spiritual and religious, right? You're not telling people go back to church.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No, I'm not. No, we're not promoting a specific organized form of religion or practice. Life is spontaneous, so I think to be spontaneous about how you practice that or how you do that. Except that what you try to do, you do with love in your actions. If love is in your actions, then I think what you do will be spiritual.
I like that. I like that a lot.
You can go to church 1,000 times and do it kind of robotically and at a set time and a set way, and that's not necessarily it. It's about living in a loving manner.
And putting those thoughts out there, and there is some really amazing science that has been done that, you know, for the skeptics to, you know, think, oh, that's not going to, or say maybe that's not going to have any effect. Originally Princeton started it, but the Global Consciousness Project that has monitored, they have a website, Global Consciousness Project, people can go to look at the definition of it. I'm sure you've been aware of it. but it monitors actual changes. They have a way of using random effects generating computers that generate random sequences of numbers. And when large events happen that affect the global consciousness, big traumatic events, things that lots of people are focusing on, even large globally organized meditations, they have found that this registers in their the random sequence changes, and they show this time and time again as evidence that combined thoughts in the collective mind are an actual physical force that do have effects and can be monitored scientifically. And they have some amazing information on their website that shows over and over things like Diana's death, even, and events having to do with mass of the voting, you know, that was so split between, you know, Bush and Gore, and all these things registered in the levels and their number sequences showing definite changes in the random sequence when there's a big, like a shockwave hits the global consciousness.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and we're going to get much, much more into that in our next hour. We're going to take about a 3.5-minute break right now, and we will definitely be back with more of Ed and Chris Sherwood. This is a 3-hour program, so if you're not getting all 3 hours, make sure to get a hold of us, and we'll get a hold of that affiliate and take care of that. We'll be back after this 3-minute break with more Ed and Chris Sherwood. Don't go away. More of X Squared Radio coming. And welcome back, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. Don't forget, next week on this program, we have Dr. John L. Turner coming on the program. His book, Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations, A Doctor's Journey Through the Worlds of Divine Intervention, Near-Death Experiences, and Universal Energy. Certainly going to be an amazing program. I want to make sure to let you know the phone lines will be open this hour, toll-free, anywhere, on planet or off planet. If you can get to a cell phone tower, you can get to us at 888-389-3452. We want to make sure that you know how to get to us. Also, toll-free, we have 877-489-6350. And make sure that you call in, and we'll let you ask questions. Ed and Chris Sherwood, and we'll be back in just about 15 seconds. Don't go away. Make sure to have your seatbelt fastened. This hour on X Squared Radio, we're going to go well past your imagination. Hang in there. You'll be safe with us. Glad you are tuning in. Are you ready to get squared? Also, don't forget to realize that summer's coming on, and with that comes fun in the sun. One of our new affiliates is Wetsuit Warehouse. So on the right-hand side of the website at X Squared Radio, make sure to click on that banner. Free shipping and amazing products. If you like to get out surfing, diving, skiing, any other water sports wear, save fuel and get the best for less by clicking on Wetsuit Warehouse. And also, our newest affiliate is Moose Jaw. Now, I know that is a really strange name, sort of like Yahoo or Google was several years ago. But Moose Jaw is going to be a household name in outdoor gear for survival without roughing it. If you think you're going to be on the road, so to speak, or in the mountains or in the desert, you might as well do it at comfort. Get on down to Moose Jaw by clicking the banner on X Squared Radio and take care of yourself while you're out there. Lots of critters will be after you. Our guests tonight, Ed and Chris Sherwood, long, long record with UFOs and with crop circles. It's almost impossible to get expertise in both of these fields, let alone one set of experts that have a long and stellar record with both of these phenomena. I'm so thankful to have both of you on the program. Welcome back.
Thank you, Brooke.
Thank you.
It's very touching to feel acknowledged. It's one of the things we seldom experience on a personal level, so thank you.
Well, you know, if you get out to these conferences, you'll realize that there's a genre to this, shall we call it, New Age thing out there. But the reason it's out there is because people have, in their lifetimes, they will have an ascension experience. They'll have some kind of experience that changes them, or that lets them know that the traditional way that their school teachers or their pastor or their priest or their shaman told them the way things were wasn't so anymore. And even more profoundly, they realized that there was more to them than meets the eye. And they wanted to address it. They wanted to take care of the inner being that is inside that person staring back at the mirror at you in the morning. And what happens is they gravitate toward this genre of New Age, shall we call it, because here are where the answers are. Here are where other seekers like them are saying, I think I know why I'm here, and I think I know where I'm from, and I'd really like to know how to help this planet go where I think it should go. And I've seen Ed and Chris around at the different conferences, and I got to tell you, they're hard workers. They're constantly in front of the people, constantly talking. They're on panels. They're writing free books and free online things that people can access and uplift themselves. And if there's any way that the millions of listeners of X Squared Radio out there can patronize Ed and Chris Sherwood, it's by going to their website, cropcircleanswers.com. Any products there, any donations that you could make will certainly help their studies go on and their leadership in this area. And I'm telling you, people, it's groundbreaking leadership. Everyone else in this genre is following in their footsteps. That's my opinion.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That's a great
word. We are totally self-funded operation. We have always been so. We've only always been two people. We're not an organization. We're not a big group. We're not backed by anybody. We've been made broke over and over and over doing this, which we do with our whole beings, and we dedicate our lives to this. I had some experiences in my childhood which woke me up and showed me a mirror to myself on a deeper level, and also some things to do with the universe, like the fact we're not alone. And once you have those experiences, especially if they're close encounter type experiences, you cannot be the same person you were before them again. And if you are acting with full consciousness, then you cannot forget those things. And
you want to share, you want to share what you have experienced or what you've seen.
What you've learned,
and,
too.
Yes, and what you've learned.
We feel this very much.
That's been our driving motivation for so many years, because we've found so many things, learned so many things from the crop circle phenomena. A lot of our work and our writing has to do with decoding the formations that we feel were absolutely genuine and non-man-made. And it's been a great shame and a terrible tragedy for the phenomena that so many human hoaxers have gotten involved and have confused the subject over the years so badly that there's absolutely no discernment practically among many.
So we've focused a great deal of our time trying to discern the non-man-made from the man-made, and to give that to other people to consider as evidence, and to do it freely. You know, our motivation is a spiritual one, and we don't want that to be held up by a material pursuit or a way of merchandising the phenomenon, like has happened in some quarters. And you know, we also try to, in a way, demystify and open up the reality of these other realities. And you know, that draws us flack from kind of various quarters. And we feel that if we are to be a place where people can find quality information on crop circles, UFOs, parapsychological phenomena, we know we're not the only quality resource out there for this, but we want to offer it to all freely. And this is what we dedicate ourselves to, and we feel like, you know, the most you can do as an individual in this time is to try to educate and raise consciousness of the people around you. You know, once you've gained that understanding of what we need to be doing more in our lives to improve their quality and to treat others and the planet differently.
Well, you know, I have felt that. And, you know, I grew up in traditional religious household and maintained that as I raised my kids, and they're thankful for that stability too. But I got to tell you, after the Ascension experience, and mine came, I think mine came in two stages. I think what happened to me very young, like yours did, Chris, and by the way, Ed, I want you to share that with us if you feel so compelled.
Yeah.
And the second came, I was about 51 years old. You know, I thought I had everything figured out and had a good career, and, well, I still have a good career, but, you know, I wasn't really spiritually curious at that moment. It was perhaps I was on a path of spiritual retirement, so to speak. And an outside visitor came in and said, by the way, I know who you are, and kind of woke me up, and I went, okay. And just like you said, I couldn't go back. I couldn't go back and sit in the congregation and say, I know, but I can't say. I know, but I can't say. And so I left, and I've never felt freer in my life. And also, one of the things that I've noticed is almost universal is, you know, I heard this teaching my whole life, that you should love others as you love yourself, and you should love God with your whole might, mind, and spirit. And I believed that my whole life. And then I realized that the whole thing was written in Greek, and in Greek, it's often written in reverse order of the logic. It actually means to love yourself, and then you will be able to love your neighbor. And in doing that, you will be loving God. And it made complete sense to me. It was perfect. And I've ever since then had high attention on making sure that I'm loved by me. And that's sometimes difficult to do. We beat ourselves up every day, and you see it. Yeah, you see it all the time. People hate themselves, and so what do we do? We end up at war. We're not going to end up at war if we love ourselves, are we?
No, absolutely, and value the life and the individual soul that each person has as well.
Very good. So, Ed, tell us about the experience when you were young. Now, this didn't set you on a lifelong course of UFO research, but it certainly awakened you. So why don't you share that with us?
Well, it certainly did. It was my big personal life-altering initiation to other realities. It happened in 1974, just 2 months shy of my ninth birthday, and it happened at night. And in ufology, it would be called a bedroom visitation. And it was, at least initially, the most frightening experience in my entire life. But basically, I awoke in the middle of the night feeling compelled to get out of bed and stand by my bunk bed with my brother sleeping below. It just woke me straight up, and I followed this instruction implicitly, stood by my bed in the dark, which is something I wouldn't do at that time. Earlier in my childhood, I wasn't initially frightened of the dark, but then because I had a lot of parapsychological events happening, like poltergeist incidents, my family became frightened, my brother, and eventually it frightened me. So I wouldn't normally get out of the bed in the middle of the night, even to go to the loo, because of that childhood fear of the bogeyman, you know. But on this instance, it was different, and I got out of bed, stood there, waiting for something to happen, knowing that something was about to happen. And within a minute, a bright light appeared in the corner of the room, very bright white light that expanded, and it took on a humanoid form. And at that moment, I was just frozen, paralyzed to the spot with fear. And I can still remember, to this day, my little hairs on the back of my neck standing up, and I couldn't speak, I couldn't move, couldn't take my eyes off the face of this being that was materializing. It was bright white, it was glowing, it stood about 6 feet from me, and it said in my mind, "Don't be afraid, I'm not going to hurt you." And as soon as I heard those words, all the fear lifted from me, I felt tremendous peace, and then the being said to me, "Do you remember?" And as soon as I heard those words, my mind filled with images which I understood were to do with my life in this lifetime and in some previous lifetime. Now, as a 9-year-old child, I couldn't get my head around all of the images I was witnessing. A lot just went literally completely over my head. But I knew within my being that what I was seeing was myself. And I've always found this interesting, that my first face-to-face contact with a non-human intelligence wasn't a conversation about where he comes from and what does he do and all this stuff. No, it was me being asked, do I remember something about myself? And it was that event that really woke me up. I came away from that experience with not just the knowledge that we're not alone. I felt that there was, we weren't alone, but this was like concrete in my face.
Now Ed, did you ask the being what his name was or her name was?
No, I didn't. Actually, I didn't ask it anything. At least I didn't consciously. I have missing time with this incident. I've had some very dramatic missing time instances since then, too, with even other people present who were also involved. But in this particular case, where I was woken up, I think, for the first time, what I saw in the images was so emotionally unsettling to me, even though I was seeing what I understood to be images and events, information to do with my life. It was so emotionally unsettling for a 9-year-old child that I have missing time in relation to that. I have a vivid memory of how this encounter began. I have a memory of some of the information that was revealed. And other things have happened over the years. I might be doing something, not thinking at all about that incident, and maybe not so for weeks, months, or longer. And then suddenly something in my environment will trigger a memory from that great flood of information, which I feel I had a super conscious experience of my own soul, in a way. I feel like the being offered me an experience which awakened me to the fact that we're not only not alone, but we have all lived many lives. Our soul needs to live many lives in the process to return from where it comes. And to do that, we need to satisfy the needs we have within our consciousness, the needs to satisfy our existence, include answering these great existential questions that we have at some point in our life or at some point on our soul journey of lives, I feel. So I had more than one reality awakened to me in that experience, and I found that afterwards I also developed an attitude very quickly that it didn't matter to me where the being came from or what its name was, provided it came with love. And I started to voice this because I also felt from a very, very early age, even before this encounter incident, that there is a universal mind, the universal consciousness, an infinite intelligence. So we might call it God or we call it something else, but I felt that we're all part of a greater consciousness and a psychokinetic reality, and that every one of our thoughts, our emotions, our energy of our attention and intentions all have an effect both on an individual level and collectively. And this is a universal thing too. And I felt that there was always this universal mind aware of everything we're doing, soaking up everything that's happening from moment to moment. And when I would look at a close encounter or interaction with non-human intelligences, I would always first give my if you like, allegiance to this universal mind. And to give you a little example, I don't know who to call. I don't actually call in UFOs, but what I do is I invite any benevolent intelligences to participate, and if they can, show themselves. And sometimes they do. But I send that request out to what I call the main switchboard, which is the universal mind, which I feel that they can plug into. And this experience I had at 9 that woke me up to the fact we're not alone also woke me up to remembering that we are, at all times, every one of us, we are cosmic beings. We are human beings, yes, but we are also soul beings, and we are cosmic beings. We've lived many lives up to this point. We just don't remember all of the information. We might not remember any of the information on a past life until something happens in our current life to trigger that memory that might require a need, a deep need within you in this lifetime for a partial memory or more memory to come to your conscious mind.
Right, right. It's sort of like maybe, you know, giving you a head start toward, you know, helping the planet, so to speak.
Yeah.
By the way, one of my listeners, Alex, writes me a note here on your last comment about crop circle hoaxes, and he says, I disagree with them when they say that all man-made crop formations are hoaxes. The Druids and Native Americans would make them as a beacon or temple for our world brothers, and many continue the tradition. They are communicating between heaven and earth, no matter who made them. And I got to tell you, if I was among some hoaxers, and I got to tell you, some of those crop formations are nothing short of inspirational, and I'm out there in the dark trying to leave no trace and trying to make the most beautiful crop circle that I can, I'll bet you I'm having a spiritual experience while I'm doing it. So I got to have it. On some level, I agree with Alex. How about you?
Well, I think there's a gray area here. Over the years, we've seen deceptive human circle makers changing their tone and changing what they call themselves due to the way the media and other people are perceiving them. I mean, initially, it was kind of shamelessly, clearly deceptive, trying to fool researchers. There was no spiritual or higher principle in their activities. But when they became aware of people like ourselves going to locations and meditating and things occurring, like formations appearing, for example, which has happened, they started to try to give credit to their activity, which essentially involves deception. They're not doing this in a spiritual way. They're not, many formations they made on land where they did not get permission first. They were not honest that they made a formation. This was a man-made formation. You know, they're trying to perpetuate a myth that this is something mysterious and not necessarily man-made, when actually it was. When you bring human consciousness to a place, you bring the energy of human consciousness to that place. And it's not surprising that there could be effects generated or attracted to even a man-made formation. I mean, I've talked to human circle makers who've told me they've had experiences inside or near a crop circle formation that they made. They heard unusual sounds or they saw balls of light. Yeah, I interviewed a guy some years ago briefly who took me aside. I asked him, you know, have any of you witnessed anything unusual while you've been out in the fields making formations? He affirmed that they had, and then took me aside because he didn't want other people to hear it, and said that one day he designed a formation for them to go out and make that night, and wrote on the paper the actual location. And when they got to the location, it was already waiting for them.
Oh.
And this frightened them, and they left.
So very interactive.
It's a highly interactive psychokinetic phenomena. So it's not surprising that human circle makers, as well as researchers and other people, should have an experience of the different aspects of the phenomenon. And that also includes human circle makers picking up at times what other people are focusing on, because everyone is focusing on the phenomenon in one way or another. And the way human consciousness works, you know, on a collective scale, if you are an individual in a group that's thinking on a similar thing, you have a sympathetic connection that establishes itself, and you can experience clairvoyance, telepathy, basic phenomena of collective consciousness. But there is a big difference in creating a formation aware that the shape could have an energetic effect, doing a meditation in it and enhancing that effect, doing it openly and not in a deceptive way, not sneaking into a field and trying to hide from people to do this, but doing it openly and honestly, do it as an experiment even to test these things, but do it honestly and openly. Don't try to perpetuate the myth that it was not man-made.
Well, now there are more than just crop circles, right? I mean, we have military, Navy reports of strange patterned lights, even in the sea, right? These are, what are they called? They're called marine circles?
Right, marine light wheels. I've written a couple articles on that phenomena, and maybe that's where you're getting this information. But yes, there was a spectacular confirmation of this phenomenon that I wrote an article about that happened in 2007, where a Navy ship was going through the Straits of Hormuz. They were actually being deployed up on a mission up into the Persian Gulf. And they, in the middle of the night, 30 guys on board this Navy ship, which the deck was like 80 feet above the surface of the sea, so you can imagine they had a great panoramic view. And they said for as far as they could see, they began to see something strange on the horizon, this sort of strange lights in the ocean. And by the time they arrived at what they were looking at, as far as they could see to the horizon, there were geometric shapes of phosphorescent. Maybe I should back up and describe why this happens. In the warmer seas, there's bioluminescent plankton that when you a ship goes through it, it'll leave a glowing wake, or you can, fish or any kind of disturbance makes the plankton luminesce briefly. And this marine light wheel phenomena happens when there's an apparent electromagnetic effect going on, and I've done some research and have some real strong theories on what I think it is. But when the marine light wheel phenomena occurs, you get gigantic rotating wheels with spoked wheels and concentric circles radiating outward. They said, the guys that saw it on the Navy ship said it looked like an underwater disco show. It completely blew their minds. They thought Iran had some kind of scalar weaponry that they were being attacked with. And they went online, and following it after their minds were completely blown, they went online to try to find out what in the world it was, and they found an article that I wrote in 1997 about this phenomenon, which I discovered in early crop circle research, because it had a lot of characteristics that reminded me of things that you could observe in crop circles, shapes, circular shapes, clockwise and anti-clockwise, going on at the same time in the marine light wheels. Same thing happens in crop circles where elements are clockwise and anti-clockwise, the size, the configurations, the fact that they happen on leeward slopes, and marine light wheels seem to happen in certain depths of water where the electromagnetic connection between planet's electromagnetics and the atmospheric, some kind of an electromagnetic discharge that probably similar to sunspot activity or definitely related to solar activity, because a confirming thing that happened the weekend, that this was in May of 2007, the very same weekend that this spectacular marine light wheel event was witnessed, there were racing pigeon trials going on in Europe and in Africa, and because of electromagnetic disturbances due to solar activity, thousands of these pigeons lost their way because the magnetic fields were disturbed. They lost their track, they were confused, and thousands of these poor pigeons were lost because of this electromagnetic disturbance that happened because there had been a couple C-class flares on the sun, I believe, and it stimulated solar disturbances, in the electromagnetic field. Yeah, anyway, that happened concurrently with this spectacular marine light wheel display, and this goes back hundreds of years. Sailors have been seeing this phenomenon for hundreds of years, and it's so rare that and also impossible to photograph because of the type of light, and the guys on the ship tried to photograph it, but it's only as bright as the bioluminescent organisms fluoresce. It's not like brilliant light, because it's not actually light being generated. It wouldn't even be seen if it weren't for the bioluminescent plankton that are in the area.
That would be very difficult to film, even with a really good digital camera at night. You're not going to pick up that kind of light.
Right, at that distance at all. There is actually on YouTube, you can find some film of waves breaking in Australia and a couple pieces of footage that have been filmed real close up at night, so you can see the color of the fluorescence. But to imagine
I've seen it on the beach in Santa Monica during a red tide.
I have too. Mm-hmm. Yep, you don't see it as much anymore, though, because, the plankton is dying off, and it almost never happens in Santa Monica anymore. I've heard that.
I just finished a biodiesel plant up in Washington State, and that's wheat-growing country. Lots and lots and lots of open dirt, rolling hills kind of thing in eastern Washington State. And the most peculiar phenomenon occurs up there in the summertime after they have planted or after they've harvested the wheat and it's all dirt again. They get these like dust devils, but they're not ordinary dust devils. These things go like 2,000 feet up into the sky. They look like giant red dust tornadoes, and there won't be one. There'll be 12 or 15 of them out there. It looks otherworldly. But when you try to photograph them, they don't show up. It's just like a shadow out there. But with your eyes, you get this amazing perspective. So there are phenomena like that out there.
There are, definitely. There absolutely are, and they've been studied for a long time, like the orange fireballs, the atmospheric plasmas that I was mentioning before. There's a valley in Norway that has this phenomena happening and has been for a long time, and since the 80s, that Project Hestelen Valley in Norway, has been studying and photographing these phenomena, these fireballs, which are very similar to those seen in England, and Ed's filmed, and many people have seen in relation to crop circles and sacred sites there.
We have some articles on our website that detail some of the events that we've witnessed, just a few. If you again go on to cropcircleanswers.com and look at our sightings page, for example, it breaks down into two sections, a little bit of worldwide events and another part further down the page showing some of the sightings, a tiny number of the sightings that we have been able to videotape, including an incident in this valley in Wiltshire, which is very similar to the Norwegian valley, where frequently these large amber-orange ball plasmas materialize. And from my experience of those, from varying distances, is that they plasma in itself. It's the fourth state of matter. It's not a solid, it's not a gas, it's not a liquid, but it behaves like all three. It's in its own category of electrified, ionized, elements, and it's highly, highly susceptible to the effect of focused human consciousness. It is highly psychointeractive. I've demonstrated this a number of times, or rather, I shouldn't say demonstrate, because I'm not a demonstrator, but I have had people with me who have witnessed when I have asked, with and without a camera, for one of these ball plasmas to either come closer to us or to do something to show us that they are aware of us, aware of our presence, aware of our attention focused on them, meditation, etc. And they respond frequently, right away. I've visualized certain locations, and the what was a stationary fireball was then taken off and headed straight to that location. We have some of this reported on our website. We have probably no more than 2% of our accumulated research findings on both crop circles, UFOs, and related parapsychological phenomena actually on our site. But we have already, I think, more than 40 articles up there, some of which goes into some of our ball plasma and beam plasma sightings. When you research a bit the ball plasma phenomenon and how it appears in different parts of the globe, and like Heston Valley and the valley in Wiltshire and a few other places, it frequents. Location is very important in as we know in ufology. But we have to remember too that these UFO these types of UFO incidents, which we feel, you know, when you're talking about ball plasma, you're not talking about something extraterrestrial. But you are talking about something that can be a vehicle for the universal mind to operate through. It can also be a vehicle to reflect one's own consciousness. I've said to people out in the field when we've been doing meditations and followed by a sky watch or a watch of the area, that we need to do unconditional meditating. We need to visualize, if we visualize, things that are more of a universal nature and not a specific to a specific idea or belief, because especially when you are interfacing your consciousness with the universal primordial consciousness, let's say, of a ball plasma, it does have the capacity to reflect your consciousness. So if you think strongly extraterrestrial technology devices, and you go to this valley, say, where I was living, and these things would commonly appear, it's not impossible that you might find yourself looking at something you've co-manifested if you're not careful.
Yeah,
exactly. So the way through that is to have you can have a psychokinetically co-created manifestation, which is really more of a reflection of your expectations than what really is what you are interacting with.
That's a fancy word for sonic boom, right?
Yeah. I've noticed too that these luminosities are highly psychointeractive on an emotional level too. So for example, if you feel great fear, I said to people again that I've taken out into the landscape, and I do this through my life. I've done this very discreetly. You know, it's usually, well, it is always small groups, or it's myself alone. I feel that success in doing this, for anyone really, comes about mostly through doing it alone as a spiritual, psycho-spiritual activity, and as small groups as a psycho-spiritual activity. Once it gets too big, unless it's something like a synchronized meditation, people in many places doing this, it may not yield something to confirm, what you're asking. But Oh, yeah, well, fear. They respect your fear.
Let's cover this word remember again, because you brought it up when in your visitation when you were nine. And by the way, there's something really unique about the age nine. So if you've got 9-year-olds, pay close attention to them, because that's a very common age for this to happen. The word remember, you know, it's sprinkled throughout even the scriptures, where it says things like, and the Holy Ghost shall bring all things to your remembrance. I don't think we're talking about remembering back to the day we were born. We're talking about remembering way back.
That's right.
But what is it that you remember? Well, let me ask you a more pointed question, because that's kind of open-ended and we could take all night, even though we have all night. Do you have a memory of an existence before this world?
Yes, I do. I had two encounters with the same being in different years, and in the first occasion, the being simply asked me, "Do you remember?" And once I heard those words, my mind filled with images of my life in this lifetime, ahead of me and behind in past life times. So I saw some images of myself living on Earth 2,000 years ago, for example. And I saw images of myself at a location in North America. I had different flashing images, which the detail of which, for me as a 9-year-old child, was just too much information to take in. Plus, I had this knowing after the event that what I couldn't understand would come about in time. In time, I would be at the place referenced in this experience, or I would meet the person I was going to meet. For example, my wife. I knew at the age of 9, I was going to marry a blonde woman from the west coast of North America. And from that time on, as a child, I resisted any chance of that happening. I even rebelled against what I was remembering. Because I didn't want to feel like, you know, my life is set up before me already and I've just got to walk into those steps that are already made, and who am I? I've got no choice in this issue. I did have a few little rebellions, and one of them was this. But whatever I did resulted in the same thing. So I learned that there's no rebellion if you really see something to do with your life. But, you know, again, I was a 9-year-old child, and what was marriage to me? When I finally met my wife, it held a great deal more meaning. Plus, I feel, too, about, for all of us, we actually need to forget most of everything to do with our past lives, because how else would we function in our present time if our minds were full of all of the information to do with our past lives? We actually need to forget to function. But in the, you know, there are societies on planet Earth which actually cultivate remembering, and there are societies like our modern Western world which tends to cause us to forget. And I feel that the experience I had when I was 9, where the being, instead of telling me about himself, simply asked me to look at myself, I feel on a global scale that is what the UFO phenomenon, not all aspects of it, because it's not all spiritual, but certainly the spiritual end of it, which I feel is the majority, I feel, that are coming and going, been here a long time, or at least they can pop in and out easily. You know, they're not traveling vast distances to get here.
Right,
they have technology to cancel that. We just haven't discovered it yet. But once you can cancel it, it's not a question of traveling into outer space, it's traveling into inner space. And the whole question of the difficulty of coming and going is really not an issue. So you can
realize that the entire universe is folded up inside of us.
Yeah. In a psychokinetic universe especially, because ultimately it is the timeless, spaceless dimension. I mean, beyond the speed of light, you start to, you talk about a timeless dimension of, I think, the energy of soul, which is consciousness, the energy of consciousness, which is a force in itself. And I often feel that this is what's missing in the scientific equations. It is the unifying force is consciousness. And it's always there in both individual form, down to the particle size, up to the galaxy and beyond, and it's there in the collective form too. So, and it too has its laws and forces and its organizing principles and effects. It's gravitating, for example. Psychokinesis is also a gravitating force. What is synchronicity? You know, in our lives, we often experience synchronicity and not necessarily recognize that what we are experiencing is the hidden order to the spontaneous order of the psychokinetic universe. You know, when you have a few synchronicities, you might say, okay, this is sounds like what some people call chance. But when you have constant synchronicity and, you know, repetitive, many different types of synchronicity, I think that reveals that there is a psychokinetic dimension to life.
You know, in physics, we call this, it's kind of accidentally discovered at first. We call it the observation effect. It's how we, as scientists, affect the sample that we're measuring. In other words, we bombard it with electrons, or we bombard it with photons or X-rays or something. And we affect the sample. What the actual reading that we get isn't really the true sample because we've changed it. And if you just extrapolate that just a little bit, you realize that the human being, when we put out our attention or intention on something, when we, as Ed is saying, we apply our psychokinetic energy to it, we're affecting it, for good or for ill. And if we're unconscious beings going through our daily life with a baseball bat in a china shop, so to speak, we are affecting the universe, whether we think we are or not.
Definitely.
But if we consciously do it and we direct it, especially filled with love, the way Ed and Chris are talking about, then we can also have a magnificent unifying, organizing, and expanding effect on the universe. You know, when we slam subatomic particles like protons into each other at near the speed of light and we bust them apart, we use photodiode detectors to pick up the frequencies of all the pieces that we splatter apart, even if they only exist for a millionth or a billionth of a second. One of those strings, so to speak, is called a graviton. And a graviton is a very long, very energetic kind of string in string theory, and has a tendency to bring other energy together to coalesce and become matter. So this is well within the realm of physics, what Ed is describing, that your consciousness, your direction of your consciousness, does contribute to a mathematical sum called the collective consciousness. And if you're contributing junk to it, then we're reaping the benefits of that. And we want you to stop doing that and start doing it on purpose with love in your heart. And we might just be able to walk out of this alive, people. You feel the same way?
Yes. That's right.
Absolutely. That's one of our main messages, you know, the co-creation that we are capable of doing in our lives.
We're doing it from moment to moment. We are co-creating our own and each other's reality on a psychokinetic level, which is also... In the world of quantum mechanics, as you just mentioned, it seems to mirror it. The observer is the observed. You cannot, as the observer, look at anything and not affect it at a quantum mechanic level, at a subatomic particle level. And really, the energy of our consciousness is always affecting things. And we, by what we generate, we receive. We set up sympathetic connections of collective consciousness and positive or negative, so we can be not just generating the energy, but we can be receiving it too, so that our thoughts are not necessarily all our own. We can be picking up from our collective. And, you know, back in the early days of crop circle research, there were some people putting forward the idea that maybe some of the formations, some of the non-man-made formations that were appearing were signs from Gaia, signs of Gaia crying to humanity to pay attention. But I feel that really, from the evidence in the fields, the information that's been reflected over and over is that we need to be looking bigger. We have a universal mind actually interfacing, or has interfaced here, and affirmed that that is a reality. The one question that's been asked probably the most in the subject of crop circle research has been, who and what is creating it? What is behind this? And since early 91, I have, from looking at the preponderance of evidence since 84, I came to the conclusion that there were three basic sources to the whole phenomenon. You had people, of course, going out individually in those groups, mechanically making formations, and doing so from 1990 to the present. So some of these groups becoming very experienced at it and able to do complex geometric designs, but doing this mechanically and showing mechanical evidence of having done it that way. But then other formations showing signs that they were created by a non-human source. And in our experience, we have now more than 40 combined years of crop circle research. We feel that most of the non-man-made pictograms that have formed have been created by a natural, supernatural source. It's like witnessing miracles, if you like, from a universal or cosmic poltergeist that's manifested on the Earth, that the formations are created, not made. They are affirming, answering interactively the people who have given the most attention to the subject, and also giving signs for everyone, potentially. But which is also why we called our website Crop Circle Answers, because we feel that they have been interactive answers for the most part, interactive communications of the fact that we live in a psychokinetic universe, not just a physical one.
Yeah, exactly.
And we co-create within that psychokinetic universe, each and every one of us, by not just our thoughts, but by our emotions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the thoughts precede the actions. And you know, what does the song say? I believe it's "Knights in White Satin." What you want to be, you will be in the end.
Yes.
I was invited to lead a number of experiments that a researcher was doing in '94 on a hill in Wiltshire, using infrared photography to photograph luminous energy forms that I would see manifesting around people as they would begin to get involved in a meditation.
Oh, wow.
And the guy asked me, he said, look, because I've had an ability since July 22nd, 1992, I can even tell you the day, the hour when this started, but I actually started on my birthday in 1992 started to see luminous energy forms, which up to that point were invisible to me. But it came visible, and I noticed that people around me might not see them, but there they were. And because they were manifesting on a frequency, appeared to be an infrared frequency, I was able to get hold of people eventually with cameras, and I would see where these luminosities would manifest, and I could say to the people with the cameras, point your camera there, click now, you'll photograph something. And I took part in this experiment in 94 where the researcher who was the main organizer was using infrared film. He asked me where to point the camera. I said where. And when these things appeared, he shot them, photographed them, affirming that luminous energy forms can be manifested by meditators. And the interesting thing was that the number of luminous energy forms that would materialize would occur the most just as we intended to do the meditation, not as we did it.
Yeah.
As soon as the moment, you know, we would sit 50 feet away from where we were going to sit together as a group and do the meditation, and the guy, you know, like 30 seconds or a minute before, said, okay, group, get in your place. You know, it's the very moment we all actualized the intention, the energy of our intention, that's when creation, or rather co-creation, psychokinetic co-creation, began to occur. And I would see it as luminous energy forms,
right,
and he would photograph it.
I'm rubbing goosebumps on my arm here, and I got to take a 4-minute break, and I've got a caller on the line. Anne, hang in there. We'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Okay.
We'll be
with
more X Squared Radio. Don't go away. We'll be back.
Make me a witness. Take me out of darkness, out of doubt. I won't weigh you down with good intention. We do.
Welcome back.
The Spice Bites Vitalize Space
X Squared Radio, third hour. If you're not getting all 3 hours, please let us know at xsquaredradio.com. We'll take care of the rest. I want to let you know an amazing, amazing event is coming up this summer. Live H2O. In a collaborative effort, Dr. Leonard Horowitz and his colleagues have determined scientifically and mathematically that the frequency 528 hertz is the vibration of love, which can be transmitted harmoniously through water, the universal conductor of energy. Through their combined knowledge has come an opportunity to present an experiment that has the potential to bring about transformation on a global scale. We will be participating. I'll be in Vancouver speaking. William Henry will be in Los Angeles, and there will be 26 cities, 26 live concerts involved at the same time. All the musicians' instruments will be rekeyed to 528 hertz. This is going to be an event of global scale. June 19th through 21st this year, we will be advertising it, Live H2O. If you want to know about it, go to livehduo.org and learn some more. We will definitely be supporting this every single Sunday for the rest of the year. This is going to be an amazing event, an amazing application of human consciousness on an unprecedented scale. Also, make sure to visit our affiliates, Campus Book Rentals, if you've got a student in college, could save you hundreds of dollars per semester. If you're thinking about getting out in the water, surfing, diving, skiing, or any outdoor water sport, visit our affiliate, Wetsuit Warehouse. And don't forget Moose Jaw, for those of you that want to survive without roughing it. Click on that banner at X Squared Radio. Help our affiliates out. You will help us out. Our guests tonight, Ed and Chris Sherwood, their website is CropCircleAnswers.com. And we have a caller on the line. Welcome back, Ed and Chris, by the way. And you're on. Welcome to the program. And are you with us? Oh, I don't know if she held on through the commercial. Ed and Chris, are you there?
Yeah,
we're here.
All right. Well, maybe she'll call back. That was kind of a long break, but we have to do that. Let our affiliates run some commercials, and let me run some commercials, and let me get another drink of water. So we're in good shape now. And we can run long if we want to. We were talking about remembering. We were talking about the quantum mechanics of human intention involved with the behavior of and the formation of matter and energy in this world. And how this ties together with UFOs and crop circles, it is a perfect match because both of these involve a very, shall I call it, self-correcting method of reaching out there with your emotions, right? I mean, if you're having a sour day and you're not a very loving person, you're not going to have these kinds of experiences, are you?
That's correct. Yes, you have to really bring your emotional energy right down and try to, as I said earlier, give your complete undivided attention, first of all, which causes you to become quiet in your own mind. You know, if you give outward attention to anything, in a full way, it causes you to become quiet inwardly. And this is the very state of mind that you need to have for these types of activities, and obviously to do it with a wholehearted intention. We find that if you do it with integrity and well-meaning, then if you have any experiences, that they will be usually of this nature. That's not to say that you might not have hard occasions, as we have, not just a positive experience, but sometimes, I don't want to say a negative, but, you know, you always need to be prepared for that reality.
Well, let's see kind of, what kind of experience Anne has had. She's back. Welcome to the program, Anne. Anne, are you there? I know you're out there. We're just waiting on our producer to patch her in, and she'll be good. Because I know she's got some insights. If it's the Anne that I'm thinking about, it could be Anne from the UK, which is a brand new contact for me. Well, we'll just keep going, and if she pops in, we'll just let her step in wherever she is.
Hello.
She is. Welcome to the program, Anne.
I'm here.
Okay.
Hello.
Welcome to the program. We can hear you.
Hello. Yes.
Yes, hello.
Hello. Do you have a question?
Yes, I'm Anne. I was supposed to be patched in on the radio.
Yeah, you're live on the radio. Just turn your computer down and you'll be able to hear us real time and ask your question.
Hello. This is Anne. I got disconnected.
Oh,
I
that's
want to
okay.
thank you. This is the one I know. This is a wonderful show. I'm resonating with everything you say, and I honor your integrity. There are so many synchronicities that I don't know where to start. I think I'll go backwards a little bit. I've been working in a group, Global Meditation, and I spoke with you at Brooks quite a few months ago when I first was entering into it. And the intention of the group is to enter the universal mind, the oneness, mm-hmm. with no intention other than doing where Source leads us.
Mm-hmm.
And within the group, the uniqueness of each individual comes out, and yet the group effort manifests. True sources will, I guess you would say. This sounds rather strange, but today I kind of laughed, Brooks, when you were talking about the water. Our direction took healing of the waters today. And the Metaton cube and Emoto's picture of the water crystal.
Right, right.
And almost overlay each other.
Well, that's what this concert, this summer is all about, is that resonance with water.
Yes. Correct, yes. And I just wanted to say that since we have also, a few of us have also connected, there is a worldwide global healing experiment called Nexus, and you can find it on Project Camelot, a link to it. Everybody has their ideas about what's going to happen in our world, but if we drop that and unite together in meditation to connect to this universal consciousness, we're trying to change the vibration energies and heal things in and around the planet to help it turn out better for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do all night. And we're trying to realize that the manifestations that have been occurring on this planet, be they UFOs or crop circles, which, by the way, Ed and Chris are both longtime experts and researchers,
I'm going to have to go to that website.
it's really accelerated in the last 10 or 15 years, and we were spending the last couple of hours trying to figure out why that has happened. Are we getting better at our behavior, or is the planet getting worse, or You know, are they stepping in as sentinels to kind of help us and prevent us from blowing the whole place up? Or are they responding to the increase in consciousness, which I for one, really think that a lot of people are waking up. What do you think?
Yes, they support that. I mean, that's why we feel that we have seen as much as we have, and we've been allowed to videotape what we have. We know there are other people videotaping amazing things around the world from time to time, and sometimes it's because, you know, you're in the right place at the right time, although there may be more to that than what just seems to be on the surface. But the intelligences that are out there that wish to see us mature in our behavior on this planet and become in balance with it and the universe, to become more conscious as beings and as a collective species, they need to see that we are doing these things in a spiritual way. Plus, they also need, in a way, to awaken us. And the awakening process can come in many forms, you know, like a ball of light turns into a humanoid being at the age of 9 and makes you look at yourself, to an object appearing over a city with thousands of witnesses. Comes in many shapes and forms, and I feel that on a global scale, through these events, everyone is being potentially asked, do you remember? You know, do you remember the legends of your own culture that speaks about the existence of other intelligences?
Do the three of you have a feeling
that... I was one of those at 9 years old, like you.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you had a nine-year-old experience too, Anne?
I haven't remembered yet. Pardon?
Well, you had a nine-year-old experience too?
Between 8 and 9, yes. But I don't remember it. I just remember it terrified me. And I have now, for the last about 15 years, been waking up, and I'm sure it will come back to me at some point in time, and I will understand it, have a different understanding of it. But as a child, I don't know. It's a blank. But yes, I had an experience at that age also. Yes.
Well, do you think the human race is getting ready to make another step in evolution?
So definitely.
Do I? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the three of you.
Well, I think it's definitely a step we need to make to be able to survive as a species.
Yeah,
I believe,
exactly.
You know, a consciousness, a leap of, you know, consciousness expansion to where we can see, you know, the true state of, you know, our being, our planet, and our relationship to it. And I think that's a lot of what their purpose is, to try to help us wake up to that before, you know, we've completely decimated the planet and lose the chance to.
And also to ask for help. They're not going to give us all the answers. They're not going to give us all their technology and things that they've learned to do and a process they've gone through. They're not going to just hand that to us. But I do feel that they will nudge us from time to time to look in the direction where we would come about our own understanding of that as it is applicable through from our world. And utilizing the that new way of thinking and possible new technology as it would be useful from our world in the dense vibration we are in.
Well, do you think that that media is starting to pick up on that? I mean, like the latest Indiana Jones movie, where the bad guy, in this case it was a woman, who was asking from the aliens, she wanted to see it all, and she wanted it all right now. It's pretty clear neither was she in the consciousness to accept it, nor could she handle it all at one time. Maybe that's what's happening, is, you know, maybe we're asking for it all, but in wisdom, they're giving it to us as we can handle it. Do you think that's
right?
What's going on?
It's exactly right.
Yeah.
And fear. Fear is a major stumbling block and always has been for humanity. I mean, it has its use, but at the same time, it very easily and quickly conditions our perception of the world around us and greater the universe around us.
Anne doesn't sound like somebody who has any fear in her at all. Anne, what is your group feeling? Are they moving forward without fear, full of love? Is that what they feel?
Yes. Uh-huh. It didn't mean we didn't have to tackle that. And you have to continue tackling doubt, too, because it's unknown to us. We're making the connection, as I said, intending for Source to lead us. And in a way, you can look at it as they need our participation, our grounding here on Earth and physical, to bring about change. And they are going to do it for us.
Right.
So, in a way, we're the anchors. And it's not just our group, but what the interesting part of this is even before a few of us join the other, you know, the healing experiment, we are aware when we're out there, there's many, many, many other beings out there. So whether you are in a group or you're an individual, you can, when you go into meditation, intend that you join this oneness.
Mm-hmm.
And be of service in any way that you are called. And some of that is conscious, some of it is not conscious. But within our group, we, after our meditations, we each blog our experience, and then we put it into the group, and there's synchronicities all over the place. And we see, I'm one of those people that travel within, and I don't have much vision. It's more feeling and knowing, but there's some people that see quite a bit, and even me feeling and knowing, I have the same basic experiences as they do, just on a, I guess, broader level or something. But it all ties in together.
You mentioned a very neat word, and that's the word knowing. I was raised, as I said earlier in the program, on a, you know, pretty strict religious background, and I was raised on the word faith. But when you have knowing, even by scriptural definition, replaces faith. And then you stand on knowledge and use faith to reach even further. I guess the real question is, and you bring it up so perfectly, Anne, are we reaching to the future? Or are we doing, as Ed says, reaching to the past to remember who we are?
I think we're reaching to the past. We're regaining ourselves.
Very good.
Yeah.
Self-realization and remembering what we have forgotten. It's very much a rediscovery. Mm-hmm. Remember, we not only need to not remember all of the details of the fact that we have lived before and the fact that we forget so much, you know, raises this whole question within mankind as to whether we continue to live after this physical life. But we also have it conditioned out of us, and we have, often we're brought up in an environment that doesn't support the remembering. I remember growing up, for example, in a part of England in the 70s when if you just mentioned that you saw a UFO, you were labeled crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Very rural part of England, and you were quickly stigmatized by the society. So you weren't supported. And you might have seen something very significant. You might have had an experience that if you were able to share that with your society, it might give something to that society of great, at least to some people, i.e. scientists or somebody else. It might give something very significant. And to be in a society that rejects you, when you go through what can be at times the most traumatic experience in your life, and come out of that with information, with knowledge that you know could benefit the group, the society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes a lot to stand that. And then, what was I saying about getting? Yeah,
strengthening years.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I also remember I had a number of close encounter experiences in my childhood and teens, which brought to the forefront of my being the importance of overcoming fear in the equation. Because, for example, how can even benevolent extraterrestrial intelligences, civilizations, show themselves to humanity when the response they get is fearful? You know, it really makes the interaction process highly complicated. And I, for years growing up, I knew we weren't alone. I had some initiating experiences. I saw objects. I initiated my family to it, my friends, teachers. Everyone eventually got to see something with me. And I reached a point where I'd seen a lot of physical nuts and bolts objects in daylight. And I felt I was ready to have an even closer encounter. See, I understood, too, when I was in my teens at this time, that the very first encounter I had, which woke me up, the being, I understand this, they came to me astrally. He actually projected himself to my bedroom. And he wasn't there physically. I was still terrified. I still couldn't move. And then, you know, I had more a different experience. But years later, when I lived in another location, was in the countryside, and really was in a remote area, so encounters could be done more easily, I asked for a physical experience. I said, you know, mentally, I would transmit these thoughts to the universal mind and beyond, that I feel ready for a close encounter experience again, at this time, you know, physical, face-to-face. But when they gave it to me, I was terrified again. And I couldn't move. I couldn't respond appropriately because I hadn't overcome, at that point, my fear. My imagining the threat scenario, the one I was projecting onto the situation that wasn't actually there. And so this whole question of fear to me really came to the forefront, and I felt that if I was to be able to interact with non-human intelligences, if I wanted to really pursue this course in my life further, I had to overcome fear. And I learned how to do that, and it transformed the experience. And I had an almost identical encounter again many years later, this time in 1992, with 10 other witnesses, where an object came within 30 feet of me. And I remember standing right underneath it, so close to it, actually too close to it, that I was exposed to the operating energies of the object and very quickly suffered unpleasant physical effects, which included conjunctivitis. My whites of my eyes went blood red and my eyes closed and remained glued. And itched and burned, and basically I got all the symptoms of being overexposed to ultraviolet light because I was too close to it. But despite that, just despite the fact I was just a little too close to the operating technology, I had no fear. And I remembered standing underneath this object and hearing it, thinking of this other instance I encountered years earlier, where I was frozen to the spot with fear, and just looking up at the object and laughing, that I wasn't afraid.
Well, not to be facetious, but, you know, people who pray for rain should carry umbrellas. If you pray for a UFO exposure, maybe
exactly.
You should pack those oak leaves.
Well, just to test
saying a level of trust has to be gained in...
Exactly, it is.
To.
Right,
it's a
relationship. Right, exactly.
Once that's gained, then you can...
Well, Gosh, I mean, there's so many places we go with this, and we have about 30 minutes left, and I want to go everywhere at once.
You're like me.
so it takes a little bit of control on this end here. I have all these knobs in my head. I can go five different directions if I want to. One of the things that I notice is that not everybody has experiences of remembrance, hard remembrance, like you have had, Ed, and possibly like you have had, Anne. And it's sort of like those of us that come here prepared ahead of this life to sort of get a booster shot of memory while we're here on this planet, because we're only alive for 100 years or so, and most of that, you know, is not productive. We're small children, and we're old people, and can't jump and leap and fly like we did when we were young. So we have to get lots of stuff done in a short amount of time. And so we need more experience. We need a toolbox of hard memories and not faith, but pure knowledge, so that we can move forward and do something amazing like help others. And so when Ed was telling me about all the people that throughout his school years and youth, he more or less turned on to the experience of not only crop circles but UFO encounters, those people weren't capable of doing it on their own. They needed an Ed Sherwood. And so Ed needed the whole shot of memories, so that he could be a provider, a teacher. And I think you're the same way, Anne. I think you'd handle a lot more information than the average person on the street. Not because, you know it all and you don't need, to come back to this world ever again. You probably didn't need to come this time. But you volunteered to come to be a servant, to help others know what you know.
You hit it on the head. You just hit it right on the head. There's been a whole number of times tonight, Brooks. You have just hit it bang on the head. I have always known since I was a small child why I'm here in this lifetime. I'm in many ways, I feel like I'm not blessed in my life, but in a few ways, I feel I am. And in one of them, it is simply I have known what my purpose is in this lifetime. It's never been a mystery. And I don't say that mean it in any kind of a bragging way or anything, but it's simply, there are definitely souls here, many souls here that I feel incarnate to serve, to try. They're not here because they karmically need to be here. They may have been here many times before and gone through the process of remembering and forgetting and remembering and forgetting and basically achieving the necessary level of psycho-spiritual consciousness. But after a while, when you do achieve that level and you start to choose more for the collective will, when you start to think more for the planet and more for society, and balance that with your own needs, but really gear yourself to service, and that's what I felt from a very early age. That's when you need these crash course experiences. You need to be.
Well, let me swing the hammer one more time and see if I can hit it again. The being that appeared in your room, the being in white, in this life, because you had no physical experience with which to compare it, it frightened you. But could it be possible that being is actually a friend of yours with whom you made a deal or an arrangement that you would come here in physical form and he or she would visit you at an appropriate time, usually around the age 9, right, Anne, and give you your own memories back to give you that head start? What do you think?
You're giving me goosebumps.
Yeah.
You're giving me goosebumps
right
because
on.
It's right on. I mean, have you spoken with my being? Have you? Yeah. I'd like to add something to that about the experience I had with the being the second time, when instead of the being coming to my bedroom projected, this time it was reversed. And I actually went on board a craft that was near my parents' home. And this time I came out of my body and went on board. So it was an out-of-body experience. and an onboard experience. And when I got on board, I found myself in the presence of this same being again. No other beings, just this being. Being turned away from me and covered with a cloak or something. And I said to the being mentally, "Why are you turned away from me?" And he said, "Because you'd be frightened of me." And this is years after the first event, and I said, "No, I wouldn't." So the being turned, and I got to see this very physical-looking face, which I didn't see the first time because it was all glowy and white. This time, the being looked very physical, wrinkly even. And the being then led me out of the room I was in, which was a large circular, all-lit room, into a corridor, and then pointed down at what looked like a bed set into the wall on the left side as I went in, and pointed down on the floor and just said to me again in my mind, "Do you remember?" And this time, the flood of images that entered my mind, instead of being images to do with my life in this lifetime, i.e. future incidents, or past life incidents on this planet, I actually saw myself dying as a being. And the being that I was with, showing me this, was a being I knew previously.
You didn't die on this world. You died on another world.
I died as another being in the presence of this being. And what that left me when I came out of that experience was the consciousness of not only are we not alone, not only do we live previous lives, multiple soul incarnations on Earth, but we also live multiple incarnations on other planets, because it's important for our souls to learn what life is, to learn what the creation of the universe is. Until we learn that, we cannot fully satisfy the deep spiritual needs within us to do with our very existence. So it becomes necessary to live multiple lives, to master what it means to be a human being, to master what it means to be a non-human being in different locations. One is not enough. One lifetime is not enough. One place is not enough. So that's what I gained from that. And what you said just now about maybe you knew the being, yes, I did. And because of that, this particular memory, only in relatively recent years have I even been able to talk about it, because every time I would think or mention it, it would stir up so much pain in me, emotional pain, because I basically knew that when I was dying as a non-human being in this astral, superconscious experience, seeing this event, I knew that I would not see this being again in the same form. So this friend that I may have known previously in another life, I now could only interact with as a human being and in this lifetime. So there was a lot of emotion in that experience, and because of the level of emotion when I was shown similar things much earlier in my childhood, they were so affecting that I think I had to block them out, like a traumatic experience.
Now, Anne, I haven't talked about your experience when you were nine, but does that resonate with you? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And another experience that we've been having within our circle, certain people, it appears that fragments of our soul that are manifested in other parts of the world are coming back.
Very good.
Other words, there are beings dying and people feeling it and doing the healing for them, basically. It's almost like fragments of our own soul in our it's not multidimensional if we have other parts of us living different existences around the world.
Do you feel that there Do you feel there are first-timers? Do you think there are star children coming in now?
I think there are always first-timers. I think this,
and I also think you were right that we're seeing ourselves sometimes when we see beings when we're in meditation.
Ah, very good.
In other dimensions.
I like that. I like that. You know, I had a meditation teacher tell me one time, you know, to get in touch with your higher self, you know, draw your higher self, what it looks like. And after about 2 months, you know, I confessed. I said, look, I've got to tell you, the higher self, it's me. The guide, it's me. It's my face.
Mm-hmm.
It's not another person.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can metaphorize it, if you like, but really, at the end of the day, it's you. It's your connection, your best connection to the infinite, to the universal mind, the infinite intelligence. And
you saw one anyway.
It requires listening, and that's something we often don't do. So when you quieten yourself down and you bring your energies down and you listen and contemplate the whatever it is that you need to, then you allow your higher self connection, your superconscious connection with the collective mind to start to connect and information flow.
Fantastic.
You know, on the one hand, we need to forget all of what's gone before, and we need to not know what's ahead of us so we can function as individual beings. But ultimately, the ultimate form, I think, of intelligence and collective consciousness, you know, is all of this information at one time. And that, to us, is just too much to take in. In a way, it makes me think of the words in the Bible, you can't look at the face of God and live. In a way, it's like us. We're finite beings reaching, well, we think we're finite beings. That's the illusion. We're living temporarily as finite beings, but we are part of an infinite reality of consciousness and energy, which we come from, we return to. And along the way, we educate, and we are educated by. I think we also bring meaning to it, because the infinite intelligence, the universal mind, by itself, in my understanding, is not God. Just as the finite intelligences in the universe, including ourselves, we are not God. But when you bring the finite, finitesimal existences together or in harmony with the infinite mind, what is created together is God, the unity of both. And
I think you've got it. I really think you've got it. And I also think that now, because there are so many souls on the earth, and the earth really is capable of bearing so much more if we would just manage it correctly, but as you say, there are a lot of first-timers coming here, and they're not coming here to be tourists, you know, just to be here at the end. They're coming here because their skill, their power, their brightness, their incredible experience on other worlds is required here now, because this planet is getting ready to go through a change, and she needs us.
Very much so.
Very much so.
Definitely. We co-create our own and each other's reality, positively.
From my experience, the Earth is already in fifth dimension.
Well, that's good. It isn't here in Western Idaho.
It doesn't mean, no, I know.
Here it's just...
You have to remember we're walking in two worlds now.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see part of the world is moving through, but I'm here, I guess, to shovel the last bit of dirt through the Stargate.
Well, it doesn't mean there won't be Earth changes or anything like that.
No, I think we're still in for some pretty probably rocky times.
And also, humanity is a pretty, you know, universal souls in human form are pretty stubborn creatures. I mean, we're pretty stubborn at change, even when we know it's really needed. And frequently we won't do anything until our very survival is threatened. That's what we start realizing.
Unfortunately, that's
true. Doing the change. So, though it doesn't have to be a time of destruction. In fact, I think a lot of these physical destructions or effects can be dampened or even eliminated by appropriate action and by concentrated meditation.
We're not just creating the world in our minds, we're creating the world. And I strongly believe we do not have to walk down the eschatological path to Armageddon. We can walk away from it.
Yeah.
Exactly. By our choices, we co-create the world. And we do so physically, we do so psychokinetically. And that is a very important thing, I think, to bear in mind at all times. And part of these...
I'd like to ask you a question.
Sure.
When you saw this being in another world being, did you, how can I say this by saying what happened to me in this life, me who doesn't vision much, at one time I was out at the beach, at the lake, and I had a vision of myself lying on the sand and I died, and my spirit or light body walked right out of it. And it's been, I think that was shown to me to help me release any fear that I have in the times that are coming.
That or to tell you to stay out of the water that day.
No, I wasn't in the water.
We shouldn't fear death. I mean, obviously, fear has its function. To make us, you know, give attention to actual threatening situations. But a lot of human fear is imagined and is projected, negative, fearful thinking. You know, this is something I learned from a contact experience, which I responded to in a fearful way. As a teenager at the time, I had an object just 30 feet from me. And as soon as I heard it and looked up and saw it, I was frozen with fear. I had put out the mental request to the universal mind that I would like to have a close encounter, I'd like to go on board, I'd like to have much more of interaction. But I always felt this inner voice, my higher self perhaps, even saying to me, are you really ready? When they did grant me the experience, they did not warn me. It was at nighttime again. I was alone. Basically, the best scenario to really test the solidity of your thinking. And I responded with fear initially, and I was so afterwards upset with myself by my response that I felt I had to get to the bottom of what is fear. How can we be fearless so that I could go further with this experience and fulfill the purpose of my life here, which, you know, I feel is to learn these things, experience is the greatest teacher, and share what you think is relevant to other people that may help them on their journey. So fear became an important part of learning. And for some, you know, you need what at least seems like a scary situation, but it may not be one in actuality. But it can be highly transformative. Of course, I've had other experiences that were not fearful.
You need to walk yourself through it.
Yeah, and also it's a process. It can take a lifetime. It can take years for this relationship. You know, once you have a close encounter, I feel like you are entering into a relationship with other intelligences. And in my life, I felt there were times where I could choose to walk away from that. But like I said before, after I was stimulated to awaken to my level of consciousness, that I was reaching for. Once there, I could not go back. I could not deny that there aren't any other intelligent life forms coming here. I couldn't deny that we don't live many lives and we are responsible in this lifetime for everything we do, and that it all has an effect.
Well, perhaps they are our friends, and most certainly they could very well be invited. So, yeah, I really appreciate this. This has been an amazing program, and once again, 3 hours has gone by in 15 minutes. And I wish I could keep you on the phone all night long, but...
Oh, no. I'll get off, and be sure to give your website again. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Dan. Ed, Chris, I'm going to be in Santa Monica on business again soon, and what I want is perhaps an open invitation that I can take the two of you to dinner, and we can continue this discussion without 10 million people listening.
We would love that. That would be great.
I can't wait. I'm looking through plane tickets as we speak just to see when I can get down there.
Just say when.
You have some events coming up this summer that you're going to be appearing at, and hopefully maybe in July you'll make your way up to Gilliland's place. I'm sure he'll give you a spot to speak and show your stuff.
Well, we're not sure. He's invited us a number of times, and we're very aware of what James is doing up there. At the moment, we're not so sure what the next few months hold for us, because we have some projects that we have a lot of work. I have especially a lot of things that I've learned, experienced, research to do with crop circles, UFOs, and parapsychological phenomena that as yet is not in the public domain. I have a lot of things I've written that are not yet out there, and I have a lot of things that I haven't yet written. And in the last 7 years, I've had some difficulties too with some health issues, and so I've had to be more careful about how much energy I expend doing things.
Right.
So, you know, I'm getting older too, and my body's reminding me of that. And so I'm thinking, well, would it be better I spend my time giving out information to a few people in a conference, perhaps, which would be delightful and we always enjoy, or should I try to record more that hasn't been recorded yet, some significant things? I mean, you know, our website still only has a tiny percentage of our deciphered non-man-made crop circle communication messages, and lots more. I mean, I've had more than 200 UFO encounters, and I was just saying this to Chris yesterday, and I wasn't feeling too well. I really must finish the write-up for my early interactive encounter experiences, because they mean a lot to me. They started me off on this amazing road.
Yeah, you had them for a reason, and they've got to be shared, because there are other people out there who, for some reason or another, are not convinced by popular media that they exist, and maybe they need your research to help them over that hurdle.
Exactly. And how can they help us? I mean, how can they really, even the very benevolent ones, how can they help us if we won't acknowledge their existence? That forces them to have to do things like appear over Phoenix, appear over Mexico City, you know, or Santa Monica. They have to allow some people to videotape them. Because I've seen many times in the past them act very shy to being videotaped because of the importance of developing a spiritual approach to the close encounter experience. You know, it's very easy to kind of lose yourself when you meet something like an extraterrestrial being from another world, and you feel like you're in the presence of an extremely alive and dynamic and conscious life form with an advanced technology and an advanced psychic awareness and ability. So when you are face to face with that, you know, it's very easy to forget who you are in a way, because you are overwhelmed by the emotion of the experience.
Well, they know who you are, and they came a long way to see you, perhaps by your request.
I think perhaps so, but I think they did for others, and I am their instrument to help pass on what I have learned to others around me, because I know there are people out there that haven't stepped forward. There are people like Anne, for example, who have resonating experiences. So in a way, my speaking out helps to affirm their experience, helps them to feel not alone. That's exactly how I felt initially until I heard there are other people having UFO sightings and close encounters. And then you build from that. So it's very important to share what we have learned. And we say this on all occasions. We ask, please, don't believe in what we say. Question it. And if you find it to be true, then perhaps we'll have done our job and it will have been useful to you. But do question and research what is a mystery. And in time, perhaps you'll come to the same answers.
I think so. Ed, Chris, always a pleasure. And next time I'm down that way, I'm definitely taking the two of you out for whatever meal you would like to have, because it's just one of those rituals, I guess, we go through as humans. We must consume mass quantities.
Yes. Well, we'll look greatly forward to that. We'll really enjoy doing that. So you just let us know when you're going to be here, and we'll make arrangements.
It won't be too much longer. I've got to do a coast-to-coast race with an electric vehicle.
Oh. Sure.
As a matter of fact, about 150 feet from me, it's being painted as we speak.
Wow, that sounds like
I'm in my office right now, and we've got the engine is in it and all the batteries and the new wheels, and now it's getting a new paint job, so we can impress the cameras when we come out with it. Very fast vehicle, let me tell you. It's not your mama's electric EV1. The two of you are definitely invited back anytime. And if you have any updates that you want to do, like you're going to be appearing somewhere, or you happen to have another emergency sighting, like you just contacted me with, the one that you filmed over Santa Monica, if you have a chance, go to the website. Click on their link at cropcircleanswers.com. Click on the link at X-Squared Radio. And you'll go straight to this video that Ed shot of this UFO over Santa Monica. It's quite striking, and the camera work is really, really good. Ed's got a lot of experience at it. It's not one of these blurry things that jumps all around. It's a quite amazing daylight sighting over a major city.
Yeah, that was a 40-minute sighting, actually.
Yeah.
And there are a couple others that we've found that are identical objects, one in South Korea and one in Mexico that are also amazing, verification.
And there's some
phenomenal stuff being done with night vision now, too. There's a lot going on at night, things that don't actually put off visible light, but wow.
Right.
Infrared. Ed's able to see into the infrared, and that the photos he was talking about earlier where he was helping them photograph with infrared film, those photos are in a book called Alien Energy that was reprinted just recently, in the last couple of years, by Andrew Collins, and it helped them get 50 or 60 photographs in infrared film of the light forms that only he was seeing during that experiment.
These
very same energy forms, sorry to cut you, that very same energy forms I've seen precede the materialization of ball plasma. And on one occasion, I saw the process then lead to the manifestation of a crop circle formation. So it went from these invisible to the human eye in an ordinary state of consciousness luminosities that are visible in infrared, or can be recorded in infrared, to this physical ball plasma fireball with electromagnetic field and other interesting forces and effects that then led to a new crop circle formation. So showing the psychokinetic
nothing short of fabulous. Nothing short of absolutely fantastic.
And
I'm out of time. I got about 30 seconds left. I want to let you know, next week, Dr. John L. Turner is going to be on the program. Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations: A Doctor's Journey Through the Worlds of Divine Intervention, Near-Death Experiences, and Universal Energy. Don't miss it. Ed and Chris Sherwood, thank you so much for coming on
Expert. Thank you, Brooks. Thank
you very much, Brooks. We both enjoyed it very much.
All right. And I will let you go for now, but I will be back in touch in a few days.
Great. We'll look forward to it. Thank you all,
and thank you all for listening, too.
Yes, thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
It's a pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.